Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, it was on this day back in 1947 that the only child of President Harry S. Truman, Mary Margaret Truman, did what? Was it A, she ran away from home but was returned safely 3 days later? Was it B, she made her professional radio debut singing with the Detroit Symphony? Was it C, she won a marathon dance contest in Washington, D.C.? Or was it D, she piloted a musical paddle boat up the Mississippi River? President Truman's daughter. What did she do on this day back in 1947? And question number two, it was on this day that Billboard magazine began listing a top albums chart. Who was the very first to earn that number one album title? Was it A, the Beatles? Was it B, the Nat King Cole Trio? Was it C, the Eagles? Or was it D, Frank Sinatra? First number one album on the Billboard charts. Who was it by, anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of March 15th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1956 that Carl Perkins appeared on ABC TV's Ozark Jubilee and performed his song, Blue Suede Shoes. It was his first television appearance. Elvis Presley performed the song the same night on CBS TV's stage show, Blue Suede Shoes, today on TV, 1956. And it was 61 years ago today, 1963, that the song Puff the Magic Dragon was released by Peter, Paul, and Mary. Puff, 1963, today. Brahms' Piano Sonata No. 3 introduces our classical music news. Hélène de Montguerot, the French composer who played piano to save herself from the guillotine. Not only did this composer's music pave an unprecedented path for women, it also saved her from the guillotine in revolutionary France. This is published on the 8th of March, 2024, in ClassicFM.com by Ali Donavant. Few musicians throughout history can say their playing liberated them from imprisonment. Even fewer can say it literally saved their lives. The extraordinary French composer, Hélène de Montguerot, can say both. Despite limited freedoms, rights, and privileges in music and wider society, as a woman in the 18th century, she went on to make history. Over two centuries later, her legacy remains completely unparalleled, but her story has been largely forgotten. The piano prodigy was born in Lyon in 1764 to a family of moderate nobility, but she spent many of her early years in Paris. There she took piano lessons from the great keyboard masters, including Jan Ladislav Dussek and Muzio Clementi, who stayed there in the final decades of the regime preceding the revolution. Just before the dawn of the revolution, she had begun to establish herself as an accomplished pianist, performing in many of the most celebrated Parisian salons. She was also giving piano lessons to the young Johann Baptiste Cramer. The French Revolution erupted across the country in 1789, unleashing a tide of mass political and societal upheaval. Didn't take long for precarious French society, on the brink of radical change, to descend into chaos. During the Reign of Terror, Hélène de Montguerel and her husband, the Marquis de Montguerel, continued to move from home to home around the country for safety until they discovered the perfect escape route. In the summer of 1793, the couple accompanied the newly appointed ambassador to Naples. All was going to plan until they were stopped on their journey by Austrian officials. The men were taken to Italy, where they were imprisoned for 10 days, during which time Aline's husband tragically died. Life was also far from rosy back home in France, where the Montguerels were under investigation by the Committee of Public Safety as part of their mission to rid society of nobles, aristocrats, and foreigners. Wasn't long before Aline found herself behind bars in 1794 as the revolution's latest prisoner. Like many other prisoners before her, including King Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette, her future was threatened by the guillotine. Unlike any prisoner before her, she was able to escape execution and save her own life, all because of her musical talent. At 30 years old, Hélène de Montguerel appeared before the Revolutionary Tribunal in court, escorted by a police guard, and sat down at a pianoforte. If the leaders found her talents useful enough to the regime, her life would be spared. As she lifted her hands to the keyboard, she knew her life was in the balance. The court asked her to play La Marseillaise, a 1792 patriotic ode to France, which would go on to become its national anthem. Hélène took it a step further and began to improvise variations on the theme. At the end of her life-affirming performance, she saw the men had been moved to tears. Moments later, she walked free. Hélène de Montguerel was a figure of uncommon courage and skill, who also wrote some spectacularly beautiful music during a time of limited opportunities for women in music. She was a prolific composer, publishing a total of 9 piano sonatas and her magnum opus, 114 etudes. Her music has been considered the bridge between the classical and romantic eras, the missing link between Mozart and Chopin. After saving her own life with music, she went on to become the first female professor of music at the Paris Conservatoire in 1795, established her own salon, outlived both her husbands, birthed a child, and led a long life of remarkable success during one of history's most ruthless regimes. Duke Ellington, John Coltrane, in a sentimental mood, introduces our jazz music news. As noted in jazzstandards.com, this Coltrane performance of In a Sentimental Mood can be found on a handful of compilations. It very well could be the definitive rendition of the song, as the saxophonist is joined by Duke Ellington himself at the piano. Andy O, KUVO.org, adds, "This recording, titled Coltrane for Lovers, is jazz perfection in under an hour, a rare gem of an album if ever there ever was one. Many consider it one of the finest albums ever made by the principals or by anyone playing jazz. The eponymous album was recorded in one session on September 26, 1962. Ellington was 63, and Coltrane had celebrated his 36th birthday 3 days earlier. It was released in February 1963. The first song on the record is Duke's classic 1935 composition, In a Sentimental Mood, the only recording of this quartet in existence, a priceless collection and collaboration and masterclass for the ages. As soon as Train appears with Duke's poignant piano, you know the album will be unforgettable. Ellington says that In a Sentimental Mood was born in Durham, North Carolina. We had played a big dance at a tobacco warehouse, and afterwards a friend of mine threw a party. I was playing piano when another one of our friends had some trouble with two ladies. To pacify them, I composed this there and then, with one lady standing on each side of the piano." Another North Carolina connection is John Coltrane's birthplace, Hamlet, North Carolina, in 1926. His father and his grandfather were both preachers, and you can sometimes hear the gospel-style call-and-response cadence of his playing. When he was 12, those two men died within weeks of each other. He was cut adrift by the losses, but he was just starting on the sax that year, and his music saved him. He clung to that horn. Strauss's Nuns Chorus introduces our music research and technology. A couple of articles appeared in the Atlantic magazine recently that address the question, what can those of us who can't even carry a tune in a basket do when we really want to belt out a tune? First article, Can Anyone Learn to Sing? This is published in the Atlantic on the 2nd of March 2024 by Isabel Fattel. There's nothing quite so vulnerable as a person caught up in a lyric impulse, Roy Blount Jr. wrote in a February 1982 issue of The Atlantic. What makes the situation even more vulnerable is to be among the group that Blount calls, quote-unquote, the singing impaired. Some research suggests that it's easier to improve a singing voice than you might think. But even for those whose prognosis is hopeless, there's joy to be found in the act of singing. We explore how the singing voice actually works in this article and what humans can create when we sing together. And then the article called Everyone Can Sing by Olga Kazan, 2015, The Atlantic. Very few people are truly tone deaf. Most just need to practice, a new study finds. Many universities have performance choirs, but the one at Morley College, an adult education school in London, has an unusual caveat. It's a chorus for people who can't sing. For the past 15 years, the school has run both choirs and special classes for people who want to learn to sing better or at all. But what about the truly tone-deaf, you ask? Less than 2% of the students the choir's director encounters are actually tone-deaf, she told the BBC. The rest simply have their own unique voice. Just remember, singing badly in a group is better than not at all, and is great fun. Straits' Mark Knopfler's News introduces our rock music article. It's titled, Mark Knopfler Thrills Fans with Announcement of New Solo Album, One Deep River. This is written by Matt Friedlander, songwriter.com, 25th of January, 2024. Mark Knopfler has announced plans to release his 10th solo studio album, One Deep River, on April the 12th. The record is a follow-up to the ex-Dire Straits frontman's 2018 release, Down the Road, Wherever. The 74-year-old guitar great has released a song from the record titled Ahead of the Game as an advanced digital track. The song is a shuffling, mid-tempo, melodic rock tune showcasing Knopfler's tasteful, melodic guitar riffing. One Deep River can be pre-ordered now and is available in multiple formats and configurations, CDs, two LPs, cassette, box set, etc. The standard versions of the album feature 12 tracks. According to a press statement, the album offers an unstoppable flow of future Knopfler classics with their customary learned lyrics and refined guitar textures. The statement also notes that the songs feature such genre-crossing ingredients and influences as blues, folk, and rock and roll, and reveal their charms with unhurried grace and depth. Knopfler currently has no concerts confirmed for 2024. The last time he toured was in 2019 when he was promoting Down the Road, Wherever. Gambling with his life. Thank you.
and I thought they're looking at me, but I was looking at them. They're there on the dance floor. Now they got me in the middle feeling like a man.
Outcasts, I Love the Way You Move introduces our local music news. J. Cole, SZA, Nicki Minaj, and Chris Brown to headline Dreamville Festival 2024. Billboard.com. On the 7th of March, 2024, by Michael Sapanera. J. Cole's Dreamville Festival is returning to North Carolina in April, and he's put together an all-star team to hit the stage alongside him this year. Dreamville Fest 2024 announced its lineup of heavy hitters on Thursday, March 7, with SZA, Nicki Minaj, and Chris Brown set to serve as headliners with J. Cole. The latest edition of the annual festival, which launched in 2018, is set to take over Dorothea Dix Park in Raleigh, North Carolina, on Saturday, April 6th and Sunday, April 7th. Tickets are already on sale with a limited number of general admission passes still available for the two-day event. Some of the biggest names in music will travel to Raleigh in only a few short weeks, bringing about one of the most highly anticipated festivals of the year. In addition to the musical acts, there will be plenty of other attractions for festival goers throughout the weekend, including carnival rides, immersive art installations, and a variety of food options. ABC News reported that 100,000 people attended this festival last year, coming from all 50 states and a record 23 countries, adding about $8 million in direct economic impacts to the Raleigh area. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day back in 1947 that the only child of President Henry S. Truman, Mary Margaret Truman, did what? Was it A, she ran away from home but was returned safely 3 days later? Was it B, she won a marathon dance contest in Washington, D.C.? Was it C, she made her professional radio debut singing with the Detroit Symphony? Or was it D, she piloted a musical paddle boat up the Mississippi River? Correct answer, answer C, she sang with the Detroit Symphony in her radio debut. Mary Margaret Truman Daniel was an American classical soprano, actress, journalist, radio and television personality, writer, and New York socialite. She was the only child of President Harry S. Truman and First Lady Bess Truman. As noted in Goodreads.com, Margaret Truman pursued a singing career in the late 1940s. After graduating from George Washington University and receiving some operatic vocal training, she debuted with a radio broadcast of a vocal recital in March 1947. After a performance in December 1950, Washington Post music critic Paul Hume wrote she was, quote-unquote, extremely attractive on the stage, but cannot sing very well. She is flat a good deal of the time, unquote. Her father, then president, wrote to Hume, quote-unquote, I have never met you, but if I do, you'll need a new nose and plenty of beefsteak and perhaps a supporter below. Years later, she recalled, I thought it was funny. Sold tickets. Truman's singing career was widely recognized during her father's presidency, and the February 26, 1951 cover of Time magazine carried her image with a single musical note floating by her head. She performed on stage, radio, and television until the mid-1950s. Besides the biographies that she wrote about her father and her mother, she also wrote books on White House first ladies and pets, the history of the White House and its inhabitants, along with a critically successful series of fictional murder mysteries set in various locations in and around Washington, D.C. She continued to write and publish regularly into her 80s. And the answer to our second question? It was on this day that Billboard magazine began listing a top albums chart. Who was the very first to earn that number one album title? Was it A, the Beatles, B, the Nat King Cole Trio, C, the Eagles, or D, Frank Sinatra? Correct answer? Answer B, the Nat King Cole Trio. As noted in the Britannica.com biography, the Nat King Cole Trio specialized in swing music with a delicate touch in that they did not employ a drummer. An influence on jazz pianists such as Oscar Peterson, Nat King Cole was known for a compact syncopated piano style with clean, spare, melodic phrases. During the late 1930s and early 40s, the trio made several instrumental recordings, as well as others that featured their harmonizing vocals. And as noted in OnThisDay.com, it was on this very day back in 1945 that Billboard magazine made the Nat King Cole Trio the very first number one ranking on the magazine's first top albums chart. The trio found their greatest success, however, when Cole began doubling as a solo singer. Eventually, Cole's piano playing took a backseat to his singing career. Noted for his warm tone and flawless phrasing, Cole was regarded among the top male vocalists, although jazz critics tended to regret his near abandonment of the piano. So let's close out today's program with Nat King Cole's rendition of These Foolish Things Remind Me of You.
A cigarette that bears the lipstick traces, an airline ticket to romantic places, and still my heart has wings. These foolish things remind me of you. A tinkling piano in the next apartment, those stumbling words that told you what my heart meant. A fairground's painted swings. These foolish things remind me of you.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.